I'm like really fragile this morning, so don't encourage me. I'm Peg Martin, and I'm an alcoholic. And through the grace of God and fellowship of people like you and sponsorship, I've been sober since February the 4th, 1964. And thank you, John, for telling me I need to take my own inventory. That's my subject, my side of the street. But I was telling the guys from Des Moines last night that there's an old story about a religious, some kind of a seminary school or something, and this professor always gave the same final exam. He always gave the same final exam, and that was to do a biography of the life of St. John. And so everybody, of course, prepared for this final exam diligently and tried to get a little extra slant on the life of St. John and that kind of thing. And when they walked into the final exam, of course, they didn't study anything else. And when they walked into the final exam, the question on the test was, do a critique of the Sermon on the Mount. And so everybody in the whole class just sat there, you know, just with their little blue books, not able to write anything, and this one guy thought a minute and then just started writing like crazy. And so after they all turned in empty blue books, and he wrote and wrote, and he turned his in, and they were all waiting for him outside when he came out, and they said, what did you do? What did you write about? Did you know that that's what it was going to be? And he said, no, I just wrote, let those criticize the master that will. As for me, I'm going to write a biography of St. John. So basically, I'm supposed to talk about my side of the street, and I'll try. But usually, you know, with these kinds of things, what happens is you start off on, or at least I start off on one thing and end up on something totally different. That may happen this morning. I do want to encourage you with two things, really. First is that there was a magnificent study of the first five steps, but really of all the steps here yesterday. It was a marathon effort. Our speaker took, it was about 5 hours, and he complimented on those of us who sat through it for sitting through it. But it really, really made me think. And it really always posed the question to me, is your life ever fresh? Is your life, are you current? You know, it forced me to look at myself, and there were these big charts that he had drawn out with the prayers at the end and that kind of thing. And it made me do something that I really try to do pretty consistently, but it was a good way for me to realize that I need to keep doing this, and I know that, but this was a structured way of saying, you know, have you taken the steps lately? I mean, truly. It's not something that I get up in the morning, you know, and say, well, I think I'll do the steps today, you know. I just usually just want coffee or something, you know, and maybe say thank you or whatever. But and my life in Alcoholics Anonymous has always been one that I have always, when I lived in Hagerstown, and I've said this before, but I can't think of a better example. When I lived in Hagerstown, Maryland, which is a nice little town, but it's a really kind of a backwater town, and nobody, it was the end of the railroad, and or the beginning, whichever way you want to think of it, and there was a lot of heavy industry in that area. But there was one factory that all they had in front of this huge building was this funny looking staircase on a pole that went up the middle, and there were these stairs that went around and around it. And it just simply said, Duvenage. There's a big sign out in front that said Duvenage. Well, the thing that was in the yard out in front of this big factory was a Duvenage. It was a staircase that they use in firehouses and in submarines, where that's all they did was these funny little staircases. And that thing struck me, and I never could put it together, you know, in my head until perhaps years later, because I don't know about you, but things will hit me with, Bob was talking about moments of clarity, and last night, Lindsay was talking about moments of clarity, when all of a sudden you're struck by something, and you know it's important, but you really don't know until you get it at a sort of cellular level why it's important. But that Duvenage reminded me of my life, that when I got sick, and I got to Alcoholics Anonymous eventually, I had taken the steps and have tried to live in those, and only tried, because none of us are ever perfect at that. And every time I took them, it seemed that I took a step up on this Duvenage, so that my view of life was a little different. When I was down at the first level, I could only see the tops of the grass, you know, it was not very interesting, and it was quite spiky, you know, and sort of things, you know, it was just a limited view and kind of a prickly view of life. But the higher I got, the longer I was sober, the more, I suppose, refined I got in living in these steps, the better the view got. And it reminded me a little bit also of the fact that, you know, I wish that I could say, you know, that I have just continued this merry journey up the Duvenage, and where now all of my view is just clouds and birds and the love of humankind and all that sort of thing. But what I'm looking for, what all of us are looking for in this journey in the steps, is a conscious unity, a personal conscious unity, in which we feel so cared for and worthy of being cared for. And it's almost as though, you know, I seem to, it's like my life is like this big jigsaw puzzle. And I just get the last piece in. You know, my grandmother was a great one for cheating at jigsaw puzzles. She'd get down to the last difficult pieces, and if she couldn't find the one to fit, she'd cut it to fit. And then she'd have one that was not right, so she'd have to cut that to fit, too, because, of course, you got, you know. But I'm not exactly like that. What I do is I get the last piece. Seems like I'm just heading through the table with the last piece. And my other hand is reaching out like this, grabbing the edge of the table and going, and then all the pieces fly up in the air, and I've got, oh, I got to start all over again. And that is my life. You know, that is my journey through the steps. Just when I think I've got this conscious unity, and I'm, you know, zoning. It's like, boom, you know, and the whole thing starts all over again. And then I have to pick up the pieces, and I have to look at them and take sky and put it over here in the ground and put it, you know, and start again. But aren't we lucky that the jigsaw pieces just don't fall away? We still have them. We're still alive. There's still a chance. There's been a sort of a rough year. It's a rough year going on around me. I'd like to say it's been a rough year for me, but it really hasn't. You know, I can't say that because I have you, you know. And I have peace and I have things, you know, I have friends. And I mean, it's been rough around me. In our group, we have had three very dear men to me die. And you know, suddenly, one of them, and I've been so used to seeing those old guys sitting at that table, and they're gone. And one of the people that I've sponsored the longest is in a very serious, life-threatening situation. And the table where these old guys sit, you know, we're alcoholics are funny. First, nobody'd sit there, you know. And then Howard sat there and called it death row. Dick won't sit there. You know, we have to laugh or we'd spend our whole time crying. And I have laughed with Joan when we first found out about all of this. I said, well, you always thought you'd have Alzheimer's. Now something else, all your body parts are falling off. So, I mean, we have to laugh because we've been so graced by God. You know, interesting thing. You know, have you ever wondered what the origin of the word slip is? And I heard this, and it may be just one of them, but the origin of the word slip came from Bill Wilson, and somebody said, where is so-and-so? One of the people disappeared from their group, and they said, where's so-and-so? He said, he slipped from the grace of God. And that was his code for the fact that this fellow was drinking again. But isn't that what we do when we shake up that table and the pieces all fall and we don't find them all again? You know, we thank God we sit in the grace of God and we don't have to drink. I haven't had to drink. You know, I was a kid. Remember, I just kind of close your eyes and kind of remember back when you were a kid. Now, I've got to tell you, I had a great childhood. Some of you have suffered through childhoods that no one would want to. But I didn't. And even in the worst of childhoods, there is that eternal optimism or that joy that goes along with being a child. That just life is great. You know, it's just every day is a gift. Every day there's some new trouble to get into. You know, there's some new adventure that's to be had. It's all so innocent and so unified. I knew what I was, more or less. I knew what I wanted, more or less. I knew I was cared for. I can remember lying, you know, relishing simple things, which were today I do. Lying in the grass and looking up at the clouds and feeling the green and seeing the blue and the white and looking for animals in the clouds and houses and things like that and playing swinging statues. And I think you could sort of diagnose alcoholism by a child who becomes addicted to swinging statues, because swinging statues makes you dizzy. And I loved it. You know, I wanted people to swing me around and get me dizzy because then I could... And I loved that feeling while I was drinking. And one of the hardest parts, I think, of quitting smoking was the fact that the first one in the morning always made me slightly dizzy. And I liked that feeling. I liked that sense of being out there. You know, it was alcoholic, I think. And I love my parents, and I love my friends, and I love my dogs, and I love my house. And even when I got in trouble, which was a lot, it was worth it. You know, it was worth it. But gradually, through the years of injury and insult, I lost that feeling of unity. I moved away from it. It was always available to me, as it is today. It's available to us, that feeling of unity. And I believe that the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, essentially, and at their base level, are designed to bring us into conscious unity with God and ourselves and our human partners on this somewhat dirty little globe. And they make things possible. They make life possible. And not to trivialize the steps at all, but just as a brief kind of synopsis. When I arrived at Alcoholics Anonymous, I wish I could come and say to you that I had this massive spiritual experience that got me to AA, but really what happened was that I was drinking a quart of vodka a day, my hair was falling out, my liver was shot, my blood pressure was 280 over 140, I was bloated, my liver was sticking out on the side, I had burst veins in my face, I had esophageal varices, my personality was that of a dog in the manger, which is, you know, where the dog is just ready to bite, and scared, defensive, terrified. And really, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because I was very, 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 very tired. I was so tired, and I had tried my very last best idea, and I didn't have any more. And I was desperate, because the thing that had kept me going, that fire of my brain, if you will, that had kept me going, had left me. And I had no ideas, I had no better ideas, and I was just tired. And I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got a sponsor, and I took the trip through the steps, as I have described many times, really. And, you know, I wish I could say, too, that it is a permanent conscious unity, but as I've described, it isn't. But we have them available to us, right in front of us, every meeting we go to. And I'm a meeting maker, and I go to meetings. I go to most of the time 4 meetings a week, sometimes more. If I'm at a conference, I'm in and around Alcoholics Anonymous every day. It is not a life outside of AA. My life is AA. It's not that I live in AA all the time, but the principles of this program, I have to operate with them in my life. And one of the things that happened this year was that I had to evaluate what was important to me. And with these people dying and Joan sick and all of the things that have gone on in the middle of all of this, of course, I'm 61. Actually, I'm 60. But I prepare myself. Next month, I'll be 61. And Dick is 67. Not going to hard to believe it. And, you know, as we age, of course, we make plans to turn this mom-and-pop business that we started, which is no longer a mom-and-pop business, over to the next generation. It's not happening fast, but anybody who's smart has to do it in a certain legal, tax-wise way. And so we're doing that. And we hired these people to come in and tell us how to do it. And they sent a guy that looked like Sabu the Elephant Boy in the Rudyard Kipling stories. And he told me I was obsolete. My mother was not pleased. My mother has resented that guy and she never met him. But every time I see her now, which is every day of the week practically, you're not. How do they feel about you being obsolete now? But I had to change my job. And I had to ask myself when I cried. I cried when he told me that. And I was angry. So I prayed before I went to bed. And I said, please, God, help me put this in perspective. Let me slot this in its importance. And I woke up the next morning in a state of freedom. I thought, you have always hated doing that job. You are now free. Oh. Wow. Wow. And I'm doing a job I love, which is talking to people. I love talking to people on the phone. I'm doing a job I love. Love lots better than the other one. And I thought it would be so difficult for me to let go of those reins, you know? And it 99% of the time, it's like they're hot. I go, oh, good. I don't want them anymore. And they're in the hands of someone who is so far better qualified than I to do it. So that's been going on. So I thought, you know, these are kind of questions that go with every step, or little short statements, I guess. And the first step is, you know, we're powerless over alcohol, our lives unmanageable. I can't. Second one, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. God can. Made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood him. I think I'll let him. And then the fourth step, it's I did this and this and that. That? Oh, dear. And then the fifth step is, I did a lot of bad things. And then the other person I'm telling it to says, I did too. And then I say, oh, good. It's true. And then the next one is, do I want to be like that anymore? And the next one is, no. No. But how am I going to get to the place where I'm at one with that talks about any amends? Because amendment, a synonym for amendment is atonement. And atonement is at one with. So the eighth step, I had to lift those people that I had done those bad things to because of these character defects and then go to them and say, what can I do to make this right? What can I do to make this right? And it is an observation that I have made through the years in Alcoholics Anonymous that people who leave, and Bob talked about this yesterday, the people who leave really leave because they aren't willing to wait or don't have the humility, I suppose, to be patient for the conscious unity. Because I know for me, and I'm talking about me, I am as prototypical an alcoholic as you're ever going to find. I know for me that many times in my life, pomp, power, things, guys, kids, intelligence, all of those things have stood in the way of my acceptance of that simple unity. Because I pursue those and pursue them and pursue them. You know, I had one of the people that I sponsor said to me on the phone the other day, alcoholism is an obsessive compulsive disease. And I said, no shit. Here all this time, I didn't know that, you know? It's like sober 18 or 20 years, and it suddenly struck her because she had had a very obsessive compulsive few days, you know? And that kind of, you know, we can't just let something alone. We gotta, like, pick it up and, sorry, try again. That's what it says in here. Is this a prize thing or something? Sorry, try again. Now I could obsess on that. Well, couldn't you? Well, who wants to drink Pepsi anyway? Lousy stock sucks. You know, this always stuff. I could get going on anything. Anything. And whenever I do that, no matter what it is, it reminds me of the story, or the example, I guess, allegory, of a penny. If I were to throw a penny out in the middle of that rug, it wouldn't mean a whole lot in this big room. Nothing, really, just a little penny. Has no particular value. Can't even buy a piece of chiclet anymore with a penny. Used to be able to get 5 chiclets with a penny. I love chiclets. See? They came in such pretty colors, and I remember Mr. Abercrombie's store, and I used to go over there with Mr. Natafaluzzi, and he'd get me some chiclets. And I mean, you know, I can, like, go off on... But it's just a penny. But if I go down there and pick it up, oh, it's a penny. Well, wonder what date's on it. Of course, I'm bad. I got bad eyes anyway. Date's on it. And the closer that penny gets to my face, the less I can see, the more I see the penny. Until if I hold it close enough, it's the only thing I can see. And that's what our character defects do to us. That's what shakes the jigsaw puzzle, is that when I give more attention to that kind of stuff in my life, the less attention I have to give to God and to the conscious unity. So I have to go to those people that I have done something in some fit of character defect, and make amends. I screwed up this morning already, made somebody mad. And well-intentioned. I mean, I was well-intentioned, I thought. But I made somebody mad. And it was because I was nervous, and I wanted to take care of a situation, and I put him in a position because he had to do something nobody else could do. I put him snapped at me only because of his own person. And so I owe him amends, and I'll make those later. But I don't want to keep that garbage. Because when that garbage is in me, it clogs up the path. It clogs up my ability to have that conscious contact with God. And I think in the 10th step, what it's telling me is, please, 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 help me do those things that'll help me stay here. Please, please, God. help me do those things, like going to meetings and calling my sponsor and cleaning my side of the street and living in the steps and saying my prayers and helping others. Please let me do this. Please. And then the 11th step is, for me, help me know peace. Help me know peace. And then, in the 12th step, help me serve. Help me love and serve. Where I am needed. Dick always says, you know, and Bob was talking about this yesterday, what is in front of you? What is there in front of you to do? And if we're not obscured by all of these other things that are crowding, we know what's in front of us. I know what's in front of me to do. I know, too, that God wants me to be sober, and He wants me to be kind, and He wants me to be loving. And, you know, I'm like a petulant child. I'm a petulant alcoholic. You know, Jim Beam made me the best mailbox. He makes the best mailboxes. They are such neat mailboxes. They've got a door in the front and a door in the back. So I don't even have to go out in the street. I can just open up my door from this side and get my mail out. And it has little cardinals on it and a little birdhouse. It's an adorable mailbox. And probably some petulant alcoholic came along and uprooted my mailbox and took it, just took it. It was gone. There's nothing but a hole there. And I was perturbed at first, but not mad, of course, but perturbed. But Dick was so cute because he took a post and he taped a trash can on it. He took a piece of sticky note and put 420, you know, on the side. And the mailman put it in the trash can. But I'm just as capable of being that petulant. I may not wrench mailboxes out of the ground, but I'm, you know, I'm just as equally capable of snubbing you or something. And Mary, honestly, I didn't snub you. Where's Mary? I'll have to see her later. She thought I didn't see her yesterday. But anyway, I'm just as capable of that behavior when I get upset. And I need to remember that if I want conscious unity, then I'm going to have to try to keep the jigsaw puzzle pieces on the table. And I do that by trying to love you, and by going to meetings, and by serving others, and by helping other alcoholics, and trying to stay in the steps of the living presence of God, which is, I think, God's gift. I think those steps of Alcoholics Anonymous are God's gift to us. Bill Wilson wrote them, and they refined them. But I really believe that that was an inspiration from God. And let me tell you something that really bothers me. And I know you guys think I'm just preaching about this. I've said this so many times in meetings and over, you know, at conferences and that kind of thing. But I'm really scared for AA. And I want every one of us in here to try to go out with a renewed resolve to do what it was that we were intended to do from the beginning, which is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. Because there's so many things out there that are distracting us. Yesterday, Bob was talking about this rat that he read as a result of getting this book from some kind people who gave him a box of books and some clothes and stuff when he came off the street. And in this book, there was a description of some German scientists had taken these electrodes and they had put them into the brain of these rats. and they would stimulate them with these electrical stimulus, and it was in the pleasure center of their brain. And all the rat had to do to get that was to step on a little pedal. Well, they learned very quickly to do that, and eventually all they did was just lay down on the pedal, which is what we would do, right? Just lay down on the pedal. Because they were juice, juice. And they never got up, so they didn't drink water, they didn't eat, they died because they just laid on the pedal. But just before that, the scientists would turn off the juice. And these poor rats, and then they turn it back on, and then they turn it off, turn it back on. And in addition to like really kind of drying up and starving, these rats like got nervous breakdowns or something, you know, because they didn't know when the juice was going to be on, when it was going to be off. And then they stopped the juice altogether, and the rats just curled up and died. And I think, I know, that the enthusiasm, the conviction that God has taken care of me and that He wants me to tell you that and tell you how I've done it, the enthusiasm for that message is the juice. Alcoholics Anonymous provides the juice for an alcoholic who is not drinking, but who feels that conscious disunity. That, think of a day when you went to work or you were at home and nothing went right. Nothing. Nothing. It was like bad news. Bears. It was everywhere. People wanted a piece of you. And it wasn't because they wanted to tell you how wonderful you were. It was because they had a problem with you or with something that you were responsible for. And people would call on the phone, and then you would, you know, they would just, and gradually through the day, it was like, the only thing I can think of is it's like one of those games, those electronic games where everything is binging and booming and banging and crashing and boom and bah and lights, like a casino. You know, like a casino. You know, when you go into the casino, that's like my brain. When I mean, bing, 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 and bright lights flashing and stuff on the ceiling and people yelling and people moaning and people crying and money falling in machines and sooner, I mean, it's just like you want to go, stop! Stop! And the way that I can stop it is to just get up, go in the bathroom, sit down, and pray. And say, help, help, I'm feeling bad. To get what's in front of me, what's important, to simplify. Because I don't do well with complicated situations. Do you? I mean, do you? It's like, I don't know how to describe it. It's like a whole bunch of insane confetti. You know, that you have in your hand and you go, and it just blows around. I don't do well with stuff like that because I'm of nervous disposition. You used to say I was a person of passions. It's just I got a lot of character defects is what it is. But I don't do well with that. And I need that centeredness. I need that unity. I need that feeling of no matter what, God's going to take care of me. No matter what, I'm in love.
I don't know what the next year will bring. None of us do. But I know I have many, many, many opportunities for service. And I know I will have many opportunities for amends. Because I'm a human under construction. And yes, I'm 35 years sober. But that doesn't make me anything but 35 years sober. And maybe I've been around the juveniles a little more frequently. So, and maybe sometimes my view's a little better. But there are days when I sit back. And I'm not happy with the view. And one of the reasons I'm not is because it's strangely familiar. But I want the juice. Because I'll tell you something. Without the juice, I think we would leave. And there are many, many places in this country, in Alcoholics Anonymous, where the primary purpose has been forgotten. People are out for themselves, which is a natural state for alcoholics. And life is dull, and the juice is not there. I can't live without the juice. And it's my responsibility to pass it on, because I can't keep it. Enthusiasm is one of those things that you can't just sit around being enthusiastic inside. It's something I have to pass on, or it withers up. I want to pass it on. I want to feel that love of God. I want to project that love of God. And I got to live in the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in order to do that. In the past year or so, I have seen some of the most incredible exits from Alcoholics Anonymous. Some of them physical, some of them people are gone before they know they're even going. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like they are gone before they know it. They're suffering from untreated alcoholism, they don't even know, because we are the last to know. And I don't want to be that way, and I don't want you to be that way. This area is a hotbed of enthusiasm. And you know what? What is it in me that engenders that? What is it that you know I'm enthusiastic? It's when I'm happy, when I'm laughing, when I'm helping, when I'm energetic, when I'm out there, when I'm not caught up in my thinking, when I'm not in my head, when every day is, you know, I had a good idea the other day. I don't have very many good ideas, but I had a good idea at work. And I mean, I had this good idea, and I was so stoked. It stoked me for 2 whole days. And it was just a little idea. It was just this little idea. And I went and I said, oh, I'm so excited. I've had a good idea. You know, and all these people at work are like, wow, she's gone to deep end now. But I was enthusiastic about that, and they got enthusiastic about it, and they were, you know, and it's infectious. Joy can be spread. Joy can be an epidemic. So can moroseness. So can fat acidness. You know, you stand around with a bunch of people who look fat ass all the time. Pretty soon you think you're crazy for being happy. You know, if you're sitting in a bunch of people or, I'm so happy to be here, I can hardly stand it. Well, I can hardly stand you, too. Keep the plug in the jug. God, if I'd had to stay sober that way, I would have died, I guess. I don't know. I can't say that. But I wouldn't have liked it. I wouldn't have been happy. I know that. I might have been sober because that's really God's hands. But I, knowing myself, I'd have gone where the juice was. And I need to make sure my meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and my life in particular, are full of juice. And so what happens when that is? So please, 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 smile, welcome newcomers, find new people. Let's do what we were intended. Let's do what is God's will for us, which is to stay sober and help other alcoholics. I'm going to try to forget, you know, that this has been a tough year around me. I'm going to just do for you, because that's when I'm the happiest. There's a great little book. Great little book. And I haven't used it in a long time. But I think it fits with this whole thing. And, two, the guy who wrote it died this year. And it's written by Shel Silverstein, who's a mountain of a man, a huge man. And he wrote these little, tiny books. And they look like children's books, but they're full of eternal truth, I think. He wrote The Missing Piece. He wrote The Missing Piece Meets the Big O. He wrote Lefkado, The Cowardly Lion. You know, he wrote these wonderful little books. And I'm sorry that his magnificent and giant presence isn't with us anymore. But the books are. So he really is. It's just like when we leave this earth, when I leave this earth, have I made a difference? If I have made a difference in someone's life, I'll never die. Just like Bruce will never die, and John will never die, and Ozo will never die, because they made a difference in my life. And it's called The Giving Tree. And it was in the front. It's from my mother. To Peggy with love from Mama. And I just want to read it to you because I can't help but cry when I read this, because it's all about the grace of God. It's all about absolutely, completely pure love. Once there was a tree, and she loved a little boy. And every day the boy would come, and he would gather her leaves and make them into crowns and play king of the forest. He would climb up her trunk, and he would swing from her branches and eat apples. And they would play hide and seek. And when he was tired, he would sleep in her shade. And the boy loved the tree. But time went by, and the boy grew older, and the tree was often alone. Then one day, the boy came to the tree, and the tree said, "Come, boy, come, and climb up my trunk, and swing from my branches, and eat apples, and play in my shade, and be happy." "I am too big to climb and play," said the boy. "I want to buy things and have fun. I want some money." Can you give me some money? I'm sorry, said the tree, but I have no money. I have only leaves and apples. Take my apples, boy, and sell them in the city. Then you will have money, and you will be happy. And so the boy climbed up the tree and gathered her apples and carried them away. And the tree was happy. But the boy stayed away for a long time, and the tree was sad. And then one day the boy came back, and the tree shook with joy. And she said, come, boy, climb up my trunk. Swing from my branches and be happy. I am too busy to climb. I want a house to keep me warm. I want a wife, and I want children. So I need a house. Can you give me a house? I have no house, said the tree. The forest is my house. But you may cut off my branches and build a house. Then you will be happy. So the boy cut off the tree's branches and carried them away to build the house. And the tree was happy. But the boy stayed away for a long time. And when he came back, the tree was so happy she could hardly speak. Come, boy, she whispered. Come play. I am too old and sad to play. I want a boat that will take me away. Doesn't he sound alcoholic? Can you give me a boat? Cut down my trunk and make a boat, said the tree. Then you can sail away and be happy. And so the boy cut down her trunk and made a boat and sailed away. And the tree was happy, but not really. And after a long time, the boy came back again. I am sorry, boy, said the tree, but I have nothing left to give you. My apples have gone. My teeth are too weak for apples, said the boy. My branches are gone, said the tree. I am too old to swing on your branches. My trunk is gone, said the tree. You cannot climb. I am too tired to climb, said the tree. I am sorry, sighed the tree. I wish that I could get you something, but I have nothing left. I'm just an old stump. I don't need much now, said the boy. Just a quiet place to sit and rest. I am very tired. Well, said the tree, straightening herself up as much as she could. Well, an old stump is good for sitting and resting. Come, boy, sit down. Sit down and rest. And the boy did. And the tree was happy. And I believe that that is the unconditional love of a power that I would have to be nuts not to be want to be unified to and with. I love you all. I thank you for being here. And let's go out and give them some juice. Thank you.